Hi, this is Robert Kiyosaki, and you're listening to Capital Hacking with Josh and Eric. This is the most important thing you can listen to today.
On today's episode of Capital Hacking.
Building your wealth, understanding, again, how the system works, and taking steps in order to make sure that you protect yourself along the way. And, you know, something, regardless of whether there's internet or whatever, this business comes down to, you know, practicing your art, as we learned, and that's always face-to-face. At the end of the day, we have people whose situations change, and it's our job to help them find the solution and get the results they're wanting.
I have a dream.
With great power comes great responsibility.
I can do this all day.
Shit, don't get scared now.
They may take our lives, but they'll never take our freedom.
Cinderella story. Out of nowhere.
It's in the hole.
That the only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
Capital Hacking begins in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome back to Capital Hacking. Josh McCallan here. So honored to be part of your audio mastermind. We love that you're driving around busy as can be, and you're still fitting in time to transform your mind and get around people that are doing things that you would like to inquire about and learn about. Well, today is one of those days where we get to jump into a new industry that I personally am hearing more and more about. So I went out and found the best expert I knew in our community and his lovely wife. Their team, Doug and Anna Ottersberg, are great new friends of ours. I want to introduce them to you, and I'll tell you about what their specialty is in a minute. Welcome to the show, Doug and Anna.
Hi.
Hi, thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, and you guys you're calling in, you're Zooming in from California, correct?
Actually, we're in Santa Fe, New Mexico.
Okay, so there we're about to, I'm going to ask you, if you don't mind, to share a little more about your background and all the things you've done, because I want to introduce the group who are listening today to one of the cool things you do today is you're a mobile home park investor, and you've been that for a while, but you've had a journey. Would you mind sharing a little bit about your background, your journey with our listeners?
Yeah, sure. So early 90s, Los Angeles, California. I was a part owner of a computer maintenance networking company. And at one point, my partners decided to leave. And so I was running this company, and I had gone out of town. And we flew back into LAX, and I'm walking out in front of the baggage claim, and you know, literally God just said, "Hey, you, turn, look." And there she was. I kept walking. I put my bags down. I went to use I'm going to reveal my age here.
Oh gosh.
Payphone.
Wow.
to call my ride. And let him know I was ready. And we sat down. I went over and I sat down where my bags were. And she had actually sat down on the bench right there. And so we just both of us, one of us would turn and look like this, and then the other one. And it's obvious we're looking for our ride. And I turned and I smiled and I just said, "Hey, don't you like punctual people?" And she smiled at me. And what did she say?
Gay.
I'm like, "Oh my gosh, rudimentary Spanish, please come forward." So anyway, that's, we met, and really, God put us together. And long story short, what you were in LA doing what?
Yeah, I was in LA. I finished my school in Mexico. I graduated and I was doing it when I was going to do my master's, and everything was in English. And I said, "Oh, I need to go and learn English." So I went to LA and was supposed to be there for 6 months. And here I am.
Yeah. Family joke. She went to LA. We met in baggage claim, and she's been carrying around this baggage ever since.
What a great one-liner. Now, before you tell all the cool turns, twists and turns, Anna, you are so lovely and you're soft-spoken, though. I want to make sure everybody hears you, because what you have to say is going to be great. But But Doug, if you help her with the mic, get a little closer so we can hear this lovely lady, because you two guys, I get to see you. The rest of us are driving and they can't see you. And you guys exude like a great relationship. You both seem very happy, have great energy coming through. And I just want to make sure the listeners hear you. But I think that is shocking, because one of the stories I used to hear in living in other countries is the best way to learn the language is to date. Is that how it worked for you, Anna, that you learned the language by dating?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Well, that's a cool story.
Now Doug speaks good Spanish too.
Oh, nice. And now, were you guys together on this, the technology company? How long did you have the computer company?
So that started in the mid 80s. I had gone to DeVry Institute of Technology, electronics, and ended up working in Los Angeles at Hughes Aircraft Company doing satellite receivers. Wow. And at night, some friends of mine from school and I, we had DJed in college and we continued doing that in LA. other DJs started bringing their equipment to us for repair because they knew what we did. And that led into a company that we established outlets at, again, my age, VCR rental shops.
Yeah, baby.
And we had a circuit all around LA where you could go to your neighborhood video store, drop off your ailing machine. We would send a driver, pick it up, bring it back to the depot, fix it, and return it. That morphed into computer maintenance, networking, all of those kinds of things. I was running that when we met. And during that time, I had been fortunate enough to have a mentor that had shepherded us along from literally when we started all through the years. And one of the things he had said to us at that point was, you need to get something other than you working for you. This is a good business. You've made it past the 5-year mark. A lot of people don't ever do that. But yet, what would happen if you couldn't, you know, come in to open, you know, the door tomorrow? Or, you know, what if you didn't want to? What would happen? And so that led to some similar discussions. And when we met and started dating, this amazing woman had done something almost unheard of. You know, at that time, she bought a house herself
that is
Mexico. So we were both interested in real estate. And back at that time, there was a guy, Charles J. Givens, wrote some books, Financial Self-Defense, Wealth Without Risk, also Robert Allen. We started reading those books, and one thing led to another. In fact, a friend of mine, his mother was a contract buyer. She bought contracts like seller financing, like notes, mortgages, contracts. Yeah. And she worked for a large insurance company, and she found out that we had been going to these seminars, you know, and she's like, hey, if you really want to learn real estate, guys, you need to go meet this guy, Jimmy Napier. And so we went to one of his seminars, and that's what got us on the path to manufactured housing, mobile homes.
You guys are awesome. So that was the 80s, right? You were just describing? Because it sounds
late
a lot.
80s, what? Early 90s?
90s.
Today, so many of the guests we've had on the show and so many people in this country have been influenced by Bigger Pockets teaching similar principles. As a matter of fact, here's some Bigger Pockets books, the note investing. And these guys who all talk about note investing, they all talk about Jimmy Napier. So let me run down those names of those books one more time. Jimmy Napier, he's the notes guy, right? Then
Jimmy Napier.
Mm-hmm. Robert Allen. He's the guy. Correct me if I'm wrong. I have one of his books. It talks about no money down from the late 90s. I bought that.
90s.
Yeah. And then who was the first person you said? Because that one I haven't bought yet. Charles?
Charles J. Givens.
What was his books again? Because those were really interesting.
So he
names.
Wrote a book called Wealth Without Risk, Financial Self-Defense. He also wrote a personal development book called Super Self.
Geez, these are really interesting titles. Wealth Without Risk and Self-Defense. What was the self-defense one again?
Financial self-defense.
Guys, as you're driving in your Tesla, you're probably like, why is Josh asking the same question over and over? I am definitely getting these books because they were written at a time before the internet. They were written at a time. So my point, I love how it's timeless. And you said another thing. You said you were going to seminars and someone from a friend of yours who was in the insurance business was buying notes. And yep. What's cool is back then, it was like secret knowledge back then. It was is because that person was in the world of insurance. They had a they've seen through the code already. You know, I always say it's like a code. Like once you see how money is made and how debt works and how cash flowing assets work, it's like a code. And what you and I are doing on this show, Capital Hacking, is cracking that code for those listeners. So if you're driving around, what an honor to be around Doug and Anna, because they did it before the internet, which has made it harder. So you guys are like stronger muscles. And today we're going to take your advice after we listen to your show, and we're going to implement some of it. So thank you for this. And those books, even though they're written a generation, a different generation before the internet, they're still, what an interesting principle, wealth without risk. What was the thesis of that book? What was the point? So what's the wealth without
risk? Basically it's building your wealth, but understanding, again, how the system works and taking steps in order to make sure that you protect yourself along the way. And, you know, something, regardless of whether there's internet or whatever, this business comes down to, you know, practicing your art, as we learned. And that's always face to face. At the end of the day, we have people whose situations change, and it's our job to help them find the solution and get the results they're wanting. Right.
What a nugget. What a nugget right there. That is a quotable quote. So you look at real estate transactions, and I want to give everybody highlight this for Anna and Doug to what they do, guys. We should all learn from. They see their transactions of buying things as solutions for the seller. Once you kind of put that hat on, and this is how we try to do it in our business too, Doug, is you now are not trying to negotiate down a price. You're not, it's not that. It's about finding a solution to their desire to leave the project. And because you buy things like mobile home parks now, these are a little more complicated to sell and operate. So it's much more personal relationship to make that transaction, I believe. Correct?
It's true. And one of the things that we both learned early on was, again, my friend's mother, Barbara, when we went to this very first seminar down in Florida with all these people. As we were going into the hotel, she took my friend aside and she was having a mom moment. And she's like, "No, boys, keep your mouth shut, keep your ears open. And remember, you never know who you're sitting next to. Some of these people in here might look like they shop at Goodwill. I guarantee they could write a check for this hotel and it would clear."
Wow.
And it just turned out that, you know, she and I started going to these events and meeting a lot of people. And many of them are still have passed on. Some of them are still active investors with us.
Anna, what is your perspective on it at the time? So you bought your property in Mexico, so you had courage. But what about these conferences and seminars? How did you interpret it? Did you like it?
Well, to me, everything was new because it was a new country, new language, new, we just got married. And when we were going to these conferences, in Mexico, we don't have really mobile home parks or mobile homes. And so I didn't know what a mobile home was. And little by little, I started learning and I was fascinated with the business. You know, and when we went to these conferences and started meeting people doing kind of the same thing and learning from the best, then we were very, very lucky, fortunate.
Yes, yeah. Fortunate. It sounds like you were curious the whole time, and that's cool. And what you guys seem to have as a couple is camaraderie around this whole investing journey and a courage to just take one more step. I love how here we are talking, listeners. We're talking to people that own millions of dollars of property now. And I love how their whole journey started by just putting themselves in the right room, one step at a time. Mm-hmm. You didn't win the lottery and buy a property. You slowly made choices. I love it. It's a great testament. You guys have got to join Bob and I and Usha and Melanie on the other podcast sometime, Wealth Building with Friends, because your journey as a couple is what we love about the group we're all doing. All of us are in that accountable equity group. And so many of us are like you guys that we just took a step here and there and we built community. Yep. And you brought it up early, and I want to give you a lot of praise for it. People, You said it was a people business, really, at the end of the day, getting to know relationships and listening to their needs. Hey, man, I'm really excited about this already because you guys are, you're simpatico with our heart. So let's jump into, did you start with houses or did you jump right to mobile homes? Did you buy notes? What was the investment journey over the last few years?
So as a result, she and I studied with Jimmy Napier, and he wrote this book called Invest in Debt. And it literally, it teaches one how to, you know, how cash flow income streams work, how notes and contracts work, and how to run a financial calculator. So our background is based on that. And while we were at these meetings, there was a lot of people there that were interested in the mobile homes as a product to create an income stream,
buy, sell,
and then finance. However, there was also in that room a lot of mobile home park owners. And so we learned it from a cash flow perspective, but we learned about houses, we learned about mobile homes, about parks,
land,
buying and subdividing land and selling it to create more income streams. So we just went back to Los Angeles and we started...
We that was an adventure.
Finding something, anything that would work. Long story short, we did our first deal that we did was a mobile home
About
2 hours north of LA.
And what was the deal then? So the mobile home, what did you do? Did you buy the land underneath it? Did you buy the building? What did you buy?
No, it was a mobile home in a park. And we have to buy it and pay the rent, the space rent. And we were dealing with the owner and then we have to deal with the managers. And we realized that it was so hard to deal with the managers. It's like they were having their own playground and they won't let us play. And it was hard.
So your dream was that first purchase, the idea would have been a consumer would have rented it from you, correct? Is that what that business model
rent
was?
Rent it, or even better, today they would just call it a flip, you know, buy it.
Oh, okay.
And so that's what ended up happening. Investment.
What year would that have been, do you guys think?
That would have been 92, 93.
Hi, this is Melanie McCallan. Josh and I are just so grateful for the many investors who already joined us at Accountable Equity. Accountable Equity is so much more than a capital group. It's really a community of accredited investors that want to learn and grow together. I just want to personally invite you, if you want to find out more about this type of investment and see if it's right for you and your family, please visit us at AccountableEquity.com.
Hey, it's Hal Elrod, author of The Miracle Morning, and you're listening to Capital Hacking with Josh and Eric. Enjoy.
So much courage. You guys are a testament. Okay, so I'm still in awe because you guys just never stopped, and now you own parks. So, okay, you buy the first one. You quickly see how grumpy they are, you're saying, and not happy to have you, like not easy to work with, the actual managers of the park. So does that kind of... Is that where the story goes next? How do you get from where you are today?
So we had been continually going back for different classes with Jimmy and then some of his contemporaries at that time. And at one of those meetings, we had been going out and looking at mobile home parks and you know, seeing if we could buy and sell houses. And that's when we made this decision. It's like, yeah, they treat it like their own private playground, but they're not letting us play. At one of these meetings, it was great. There's a type of commercial real estate person that they call an exchanger, and they facilitate 1031 exchanges. And they're kind of the cowboys, cowgirls of real estate, if you will. And at their meetings, they have what they call haves and wants. And so they'll stand up and say, hey, I'm so-and-so. I've got this client that's got this. They got cash. They can add cash, but they need to get this into a property. So, if you've been there, you know the drill. And anyway, Jimmy was an exchanger and he would run his meetings that way. So he gave everyone the opportunity to stand up and say, hey, I have this, or I need this, or I'm looking for this. And so we stood up at a meeting and said, you know, I don't think this mobile home park thing works where we live at the time, which is at 7th and Spring in downtown LA, or for her over in Newport Beach. And Jimmy looked at us and his good old boy, you know, Southern accent. He looked at it and said, "Well, you ain't no tree. Y'all can move."
So he did.
and we went back to LA and we talked about that. And we were at a point in our life where that made a lot of sense. And at a subsequent meeting, we were allowed, you know, signed up. We stood up again and said, "Hey, we recently learned we're not a tree. We decided that we could move, or we could, you know, or invest someplace that where it would work, and then they send us a check." And we just decided, you know what, we're going to move. We'll go wherever that deal is. And really, long story short, there was a couple of folks from Albuquerque, New Mexico there. One of them was a realtor, went back home, was proactive, built a seller's list, actually, did some advertising. I think it said California investor, which for most people means people with money and not a lot of brains, wants to buy a mobile home park in your town. And he built a seller's list, called us up, flew over and drove around New Mexico. And by that time, we had learned enough to know what we were looking for. And we ended up at a rundown, and I'm going to use these words, trailer court, and all the connotations that brings with it. And we met a guy who owned houses and apartment buildings and stuff, and somehow ended up with this place. And he had been the subject of faulty septic systems.
Yeah.
Got hauled into court. The judge sentenced him to live here. And I mean, it was like everything you've ever heard, right?
his crime and punishment was to live in his own place.
Yeah. Here we are. We don't know what can't be done, right? And at that time, all we knew was like, well, buy the worst property in the best neighborhood, right? Because you can always bring the property up to the neighborhood, not the other way around.
Right.
The numbers, he actually was the worst property in town.
I mean, we've got stories. We took over this property, owner finance. We had an opportunity to like apply all the things we had learned. And we were solving this guy's problem.
Oh, yes, you were. How much would it have been, do you think, the transaction, and how much did you have to put down?
So at that time, one of the things that helped us was there was an MAI appraisal, which we got to study, and the numbers lined up with, you know, reality, actually. That was fun. And I think the appraisal, it was $640,000. And we paid $590,000.
Right.
I offered 30 down in owner finance. He said, "I'll take 50. And we shook hands.
Dang. So wonderful.
That was it. And I had that business. We signed the contract and flew back to LA. And one of my employees was like, "So what happened?" I'm like, "Well, I bought a mobile home park. And now I just got to figure out how to come up with $50,000.
Oh, I love you. This is incredible, you know, Doug.
And based on what we had been learning, Jimmy Napier was famous for telling stories.
Yeah.
And she and I, to this day, will, you know, something will happen and she'll look at me and I know what she's going to say. And she'll say, "Well, Jimmy said," or
"like Jimmy says." You
know, and one of the stories he talked about was a farmer that wanted to sell the farm, but he got an offer for $900,000, but he wouldn't sell until he could net $1 million. And then what happened? Market turned around, prices went back down. And at 70 years of age, that guy had to go back to farming.
Yeah.
And then the moral of the story is, hey, he could have sold for $900,000, put the money in the bank, and eventually he'd have his $1 million. But no, he didn't. So the moral is the story, when you got $1 million in your hand, you know, shut your hand.
Yeah.
Well, in our case, I know that business was worth at least $150,000-$200,000. But the most, one of my employees had said, "Well, have you got a buyer?" And I said, "No." And he said, I'll buy it. And the next day he said, "My grandma has a free and clear house. She'll refinance it. So, the most she can get is probably about $80,000. And I'm like, when you got $80,000 in your hand and you need 50, shut your hand. So yeah, we sold that.
So you flipped it. You never had to operate it.
So actually, no. So we sold the business. We got the 80 grand. We had already had the park under contract for 50 down. During this time, I proposed. She said yes.
Oh, great.
She went back to, we moved all our stuff. We bought a mobile home in New Mexico. She went back to Mexico to get ready for the wedding. We closed on that property January 1, 1994. We got married February 5th. Just testing you.
I love
took
it.
A month off because we still had like 30 grand of pocket change.
Yeah.
And took a month off and toured around Mexico and came back and started operating the property March 1st.
So you became the operator, but you had already sold the business, correct?
Sold the business. We bought a mobile home in Albuquerque because our park was full. And so we were driving back and forth gotcha. From Albuquerque to Santa Fe every day. And
what an interesting months. Twist there. So you end up becoming the manager. So you're getting a salary now, but you're not even an equity owner anymore because you sold it. But
No. Yeah, I don't. So we got the property under contract. A broker found it for us and we got it under contract and we bought it. Yes. We closed on the property and we were now the owners.
What about the 80 grand and the buyer? Did they just become your partner?
No. So my former technician paid me $80,000 for the
actual house.
For the other business.
For
your business. I'm glad I asked that question because I got lost in the details. Maybe gotcha. Someone interested, but now I get it. That's how you exited your operating business so you could jump into real estate ownership and build your portfolio.
Yes.
Got it. That's super cool.
The day we exited the operating business and took over the mobile home park was, as Robert Kiyosaki would say, we exited the rat race.
Yeah, you did, actually. You did.
Because at that point in time, we were financially free. Young newlywed couple, no kids, no expenses. So the net, or as we would say in our horizontal income exceeded our monthly net.
Yeah. Because we're coming closer to the end, I want to fast forward and just, I love that story, by the way. I want to fast forward and what would you say to people? Are you still actively buying more into your mobile home park portfolio or are you not doing that? Like you're not in expansion mode. You're in maintenance mode. Where are you at in your life cycle? And are you still buying mobile home parks?
Well, if the opportunity shows up, we're definitely interested in buying more mobile home parks. And right now we actually sold one last year. And, this market is crazy. It's just people just, it became very popular, the mobile home parks and people calling us all the time to buy our parks. And it was a big change because at the beginning, it wasn't that popular. And now everybody wants to buy your mobile homes. And then these people just came over and gave us an offer that we couldn't refuse. Just couldn't refuse.
How many did you guys end up getting to? Like how big did a portfolio go from the 90s till now?
Four.
We had five communities.
Nice.
And a couple hundred sites.
Nice.
And during that process, we learned that for our lifestyle, our comfort, we didn't like to have a property outside of, let's say, a couple hours from where we're at.
Yep.
And then the one that Anna just referred to was down in Albuquerque. We had purchased that, owned it about 5 years. Our plan was not to sell it. And as she said, we call it a godfather offer, an offer you can't refuse, which we sold and put the money into an opportunity zone fund, which we're now going to be using to build special needs housing here in our local backyard.
Oh, you're going to manage that. That'll be a development project sponsored by you.
Yes. And then the ultimate plan for that is to work with a nonprofit partner where we would just let them operate it, run it. We would lease it to them. And then after 10 years, we could sell it. So
yeah, I get it.
But yeah, like Anna said, yeah, if something crosses our table, absolutely, we would consider it. And now, as our two oldest have graduated college and our youngest has three more years left, we're looking forward to spending some more time in Mexico and doing some traveling and things.
By the way, do we still have that house in Mexico, Anna, or did we sell that a long time ago?
I actually do still have it.
Wow.
And it's been renting for 15 years, the same person. And it's been great. It's very good asset, actually.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's been good.
You guys have brought up all the right books, you know, and I think you've made it clear that people could follow your path and your leadership, right? What you've done was an open mind, inquisitive. You kept learning. You kept getting into meetings. I think the meetings, that whole 1031 exchange, I got a deal or I have capital, that environment still exists all over the country.
Yes.
You know, they call them real estate meetups. They call them bigger pocket meetups. They're meetups basically now. And we need to go to those more often. I think if you're listening now, and you haven't done any of these types of cool things that Doug and Anna talk about, please go find out where a meetup is on biggerpockets.com. They'll tell you where they are.
Yeah,
and go. Sure. Because being in that room, you guys, it looks like you are transformed by the people you put yourself around back then.
Absolutely. And I know the name of the podcast, Capital Hacking, you know, we were reminiscing. You know, that very first mobile home park, we, and I'm going to use this word intentionally, tried to raise capital. And we were new. No one knew us. And especially at the time, you're going to buy a what?
What?
A mobile home park? Are you kidding? One person ended up saying, yes, I believe in you. I will write you a check. It turns out that we didn't need it, but that meant so much to us. We took the money. He was our partner from 94 when we bought until about 2004 when we actually refinanced, and his original investment paid off very, very well for that guy.
Yeah.
And then over the years, you know, we had an opportunity to buy another mobile home park. We had a track record. I did my best to raise some capital. And, you know, syndications was just not something that we had been introduced to or had a lot of exposure to. But what we did have, which you allude to, is from our one-on-one contact and finding people with capital, what we were able to do is every time we would buy a mobile home to fill a vacancy, we would rehab it. She would sell it because the majority of our customers are, you know, Spanish-speaking, right? And by offering finance, we were meeting a need in our community.
Oh, yeah.
Eventually, we ran out of capital. So we would go back to these people that we had met. We knew they had capital. We had been able to sit down, break bread with them. They knew about us. Many times, people come visit Santa Fe. They would come check us out, make sure we're real, which we are. We just started making phone calls. And we would take those contracts and borrow against them.
Yep.
Which replenished our capital. We could go buy more properties. And when the time came, we ended up buying a bunch of single families. And then when an opportunity came to buy a community that came up for sale, mobile home park, we were able to go to our investors and use our single families and borrow against them to raise the amount of money we needed for the down payment. So,
what a story.
Yeah.
Because look at it, it's a roundabout story, but it was, you just never stopped moving. And by being around people and showing them that you're truly going to operate these with care, you are in more, you know, this is the thing that we are listening. We have to also get the people who do have the capital right now and don't want to give it to Wall Street are looking for all of us, Doug, Anna, myself, and Melanie. They're looking for us, not because they want to throw money around, but because they need to trust an operator in an understandable industry and to watch their money work. Because when you took an investor's money, they watched you buy a building, in this case, a mobile home park, and they saw what happens. It was very direct and linear. And then they understand you're charging rent and paying them back. It's like such a beautiful thing to be able to be part of the private investing world like you are, We feel the same joy with our investors. Like, I'm so glad, because otherwise people put money in Wall Street. And what really happens there? Mm-hmm. I don't know. You give it to Robinhood app and then it gets somebody and somehow you pretend like you're going to make money on that. You're not going to make any money on that. It could never go up in value the way these mobile home parks have gone up, or your single families. Because the craziest thing, Doug, that and Anna, that people still struggle with, and I think you and I know this because we talk to friends, is that your investments are giving you a small check or a big check every month. And then quietly, the whole thing is getting worth more. That's the whole mm-hmm. idea of the rich dad mm-hmm. poor dad. So you're winning twice, as because you own something real, and so do the investors who helped you, let's say. And that's the difference between Wall Street. Wall Street's like, put money in a machine somewhere and pretend like it's growing. You don't get any checks. So mobile home park. Before I let you go, could you explain the magic of mobile home parks, like for a rookie? How does the money work that you make money on a mobile home park? Because for us, we don't know about pad sites and rental. Like, how does it kind of work? And what is the margin roughly, like in a simple terms?
Okay. Well, chime in if you got thoughts. Basically, it's very similar to multifamily. You have X number of income producers. So mobile home parks, manufactured home community. It's land that's divided up into individual lots or pads, if you will. And typically a manufactured home owner will pay rent on that site. And so you just take the rent, times the number of units, that's your monthly income, and multiply that by 12. That gives you your annual income. And then you would subtract out any vacancy or credit. Most of the time you figure, let's say 5% for that. And then you have expenses. When we started, you could count, more or less a rule of thumb would be 30%. These days, I just was speaking with some industry colleagues, and maybe 40, 45%. If you take away those expenses, then you're left with your net operating income. And if you're not familiar with that, that's the money left over after vacancy, credit loss, and your expenses, taxes, insurance, that kind of thing. And then if you would pay cash for that property, like if you were to go to the bank and pay cash for a CD, the bank is going to tell you what rate of return you're going to get. And so if you put $100 in a bank and paid 10%, you'd get $10 out, right? Well, in this case, if you own a business like this, and after all expenses, you ended up with $10, if you wanted a 10% return, well, you would divide that and you'd end up with $100. That's what you would pay. Right. So income properties work the same way. That rate of return is called cap rate, capitalization. And so these days, one of the reasons mobile home parks are so popular is that they're a product that is in demand almost everywhere. People need an affordable place to live, and they cash flow well. And so instead of 10%, people are now paying prices that yield cap rates and 7, 6, 5, 4, it's like a race to the bottom. The lower the rate goes, the higher the price goes.
You just explained cap rate phenomenally well too. We've done that on the last few shows, because cap rate is tricky. It simply put, the lower it is, the more valuable the real estate is, or you're going to have to pay more to buy it. Or
exactly.
In some case, if you own it, you can sell it, and the yield is not too much because the person is going to pay a lot to buy it. It's in demand, right, as you said. It's like scarcity.
That's the challenge. She and I have been talking. It's like we've spent all these years building up this portfolio of properties, and right now is the time to sell because everybody wants it.
So they true. Do.
And that's the time to sell. But yet it's like, what are we going to do with the money?
Well, therein lies the challenge. And I thought your answer earlier was to create an opportunity zone fund where at least you don't have to give up the money to the government. You can put it to work and legally and build something great. And I thought your idea of assisting those with disabilities was beautiful. It was like kind of like a heartfelt choice. to go back to the finish the model, by the way, nobody's ever explained cap rate better than you did. I think that's very easy to understand for a complicated thing, but so people pay you rent to park a vehicle is what it sounds like on a pad called a mobile home park. What is a monthly rent per pad usually?
Well, like in this, it depends on the market. It depends on the place where the mobile home park is. Like in this case, in New Mexico, in this case in Santa Fe, is the market is really, really good. And actually, our park, we are charging right now, we are charging $500 a month for the space rent. And we provide them with the hookups for the electricity, the water. And actually, they connect the electricity, but they have to connect it with the company.
So they pay
the electrical company.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
They pay all their own utilities.
Their own utilities.
Even water and sewer, everything?
In this case, in our park, we have wells. So we charge for the water and the trash and the sewer. And so they pay the space rent, which is $500 plus the utilities. And like in the parks in Albuquerque, they're a little bit less. And they over there, they're $425 and plus the utilities.
May I ask you a question? In your business model, did you ever look at doing a refinance to pull some of the really affordable money out and then build solar so you could sell them electricity too? I mean, have you ever looked at other kind of cool ideas like that?
We never thought about the solar. And yes, believe me, we have refinanced multiple times.
Good for you. Other time, Doug and Anna, we'll have to get you guys on one of the shows and talk about why that's so unique to own a building that you can refinance and have cash, but should be tax-free.
The best part of that is putting a check for $500,000 in your preschool kids' hands and having them read the number.
Well, I love you guys. Thank you so much for sharing this story. How could we reach out to you if we just want to, maybe we just want to stay in touch with you, Doug and Anna, or if you have a website, what would be the best way for our listeners to reach out to you?
We're both on Facebook, and at this point, we've shut down our website, but we're happy to send that to emails, Anna@creativehomebuyers.com. And Doug at creativehomebuyers.com.
We love the story, the truth, and the passion from you guys. And I love that you got involved in an industry that nobody would have wanted you to back in the day. And boy, did you come out the heroes. I'm so happy for you. Great to know you guys. Thank you so much for being part of Capital Hacking.
Our pleasure. Thanks for having us.
Our pleasure. Thank you.
Wow. Wow. You made it. Everybody, thank you so much. Eric and I have always said that the people who join us at the end get the pearl and the prize.
Awesome. Folks, don't forget to like and share and love what we're doing on social media. If you want to hit up Josh, you want to hit me up, those are the best places to find us. We are always camped out and ready to talk and put the fire on.
We stand by on social media. But by the way, I know we're on Capital Hacking at Instagram, Capital Hacking on Facebook, and Capital Hacking on my personal favorite, LinkedIn.
Yes, because you can always find major players on LinkedIn. I know your favorite. These are some power players on LinkedIn always.
Gary Vee, he's my boy.
But Gary Vee also talks about the power of Instagram. So if you also want to find us there, we're doing a lot of really cool, sexy things on Instagram. So always you can reach out and DM us on Instagram if you have any questions or you want our time. We are always camped out and living there as well.
We will get right back to you. And just like we always say, you are now part of the team. This is a team that's here to add value to your life, and thank you for adding so much value to our life. Remember to share this podcast. Helps us grow it bigger and bigger each week, and we appreciate you posting a review on iTunes. You cannot believe how powerful that is.
Absolutely. Like and share this with anyone and everyone that you think it will add value to, and we appreciate all of that love and support. And do not forget, with great power comes great responsibility. Woo!